folks, I'd like to do something here that my old pappy used to do years ago when I was a boy. You sing this one, especially come around about wash day time when my old lady'd come in from washing and chopping up all the wood, and the cows had been milked, and things were just sort of quieting down. This is called Things Ain't Getting Any Better, Are They? Rotten Blues. I'd like to sing this one for you now and kind of lay it right out. By God, things aren't getting any better. Things aren't getting any better. Things are going from bad to worse, and it's just us sitting there growing a great big shell on them like an old turtle sweating in the sun. By God, blues. One day I'm a-walking and a-talking. As long as you just can't sing, some of you can only feel. Just kind of feel, you know. You know, I'd like to point that out to you, that this is a very important part of, existence. Some things we can't talk about. And I'm going to just sit here for 1 minute and concentrate on the songs that are unsingable. And you concentrate on the songs that are unsingable, and together we'll be singing them. Got that, you know? It's like, you know, there's a whole new school of artists who disdain to paint. In fact, there's one guy that was written up as one of the most hip, advanced writers south of 14th Street on this side of the left bank of the Seine. Very famous guy. He got right there in the middle of it all there in Esquire magazine, and he became famous as the writer who figures that the world is so rotten, there's nothing you can say about it, and he just sits in his bathtub and thinks. And that's his writing, and by George, he's liable to bring down the Nobel Prize before long. Well, he certainly got inside. He got a bigger picture of himself in Esquire than J.D. Salinger, who I don't think was hardly mentioned. All right, now I'd like to experiment with a new kind of folk song where we can only just feel what we're hearing. It's soul music, man. And I'm turning out an album. Oh, my God, you don't know how it is. It's on There Ain't No Hope label. And we're going to try one here now, and I'd like to sing it in the key of G minor. If you'd like to sing along with me, tune in your soul, friends. Get it moving there. And I will give you the chord now. All set now. It's G minor. And da-da. Very good, very good. I will begin now, and I will begin to feel. Oh, my God. And now for my next number. I've got another thing here I'd like to do. I'd like to feel that. You know, one of the things about folk music, friends, is that they sing about real events, things that really happen. Social movements, they sing about building the United Fruit Company's flagship, laying the keel of the banana boat. That's a very fine old tune. I'd like to sing that to you some night, providing we can get commercial clearance from Guatemala. He's pretty bugged about it. I'd like to point out there are many events that have not even been plumbed. By the way, that was a word that we used to use down in southern Indiana when I went to school many long years ago. Since we're on the air, I can't tell you exactly what it meant. But all the bad words ain't four letters, you know. There's other words. You know that we'd like to sing tonight of an event that's purely American. And many of you out there have lost touch with America, as America is. It's funny how we're becoming so Europeanized now that we're hung on Ionesco, Genet, Sean O'Casey, Pirandello, all the top European thinkers. But take one look at America as it is. Can you imagine, let's say, Bulgaria matching this for a folk right? Can you imagine Belgium coming up with anything like this? St. George, South Carolina, bringing you a special news flash via United Press International. The stalwart lads of St. George, South Carolina, beat Cattle Creek, South Carolina, 480 to 392 in a 52-hour softball game this past weekend. Despite a catcher who got convulsions and a pitcher who couldn't raise his arm, it was an epic renewal of the rivalry between these two towns, last expressed with a 1937 game which ran to 350 innings. This year's contest ground to a halt late Saturday night after 400 innings, and the players dragged themselves or were dragged off to their sacks. The game started Thursday evening. As it wore beyond the 24-hour mark, several men dropped from sheer exhaustion. St. George catcher Ronnie Crook, who had belted 17 home runs in the game, fell in convulsions at the 29-hour point. It's the trouble, you know, with fiction is that it really doesn't tell the way it can't touch the actual nuttiness that is running rampant, galloping across the horizon as fast as it can get up steam. Really, if I were to write the story of the 400-inning softball game, well, I'd like to tell you, though, if this is of any pertinent interest, that this kind of nuttiness is a particularly American form. It is an American form. I don't know quite what Everest we're attempting to scale, but it is always... Do you know that I knew personally, and I want to tell you that it was a very proud moment, I knew personally the guy that held the over and under endurance championship for the double yo-yo when I was a kid. No, this guy at White City in Indiana, there was a place called White City. It was a copy of the White City in Chicago, which was a copy of Riverview, which was a copy of Coney Island, which goes all the way back to the Grand Canal in Venice. However, this guy went one weekend. They had a thing with the yo-yo, you know, that there were several types of yo-yo operators in that day. There was the trick yo-yo operator. There was endurance yo-yo man. There was the power yo-yo man. This guy was an endurance man with the over and under thing, which, you know, you throw it around over your head a couple of times, and you had to do it with two yo-yos. Well, he did this for over 2.5 weeks. Before he dropped. It was sponsored by the Campbell Soup Company. Now, don't ask me why the Campbell Soup Company did, but as a prize, he received a genuine hand-knit sweater with the Campbell Soup twins playing with yo-yos on the front in three colors. And on the back, it said 1938, champ. Well, now, I couldn't... at the time, I thought it was very logical. As a matter of fact, I went into training myself for a couple of months there on that, but I never could get the wrist action. But it was a very logical thing. There was another thing that happened in our neighborhood very similar to that, for any sociologists that are listening. And this is the kind of jazz that never gets recorded in the sociological journals. Why? It's the real stuff that gets people going. That's why. You know, it's not great social movements. But I'll tell you about the clown who set up a flagpole in the back lot at Harding School and sat on top of this flagpole for over 10 days in the rain. Now, he had a big banner. It said flagpole sitting done here. And he was trying for the world's championship. Now, there was a rumor that a guy in Pittsburgh held the world's championship at that time, and we in Chicago were going to try to wrest the way. Chicago has a nuttiness about it, too, there that has to be explained. They believe, for example, that anything that Chicago does is inherently, not better, bigger. Chicago goes for the bigness of things, and I think early in the week, I was talking about my great visit back to the Midwest. Now, I believe once in a while that we should go out there into reality. We who work here in New York. You know, New York really is in many ways about 10 years behind all the other cities in the 20th century. Are you aware of that? I'm serious about that. The further west you go, the more 20th centuryized the country is, actually. Chicago here, great example of it. New York, here's New York with all the little streets all jammed together. Chicago, they have almost completely dehumanized the city. It will take New York a while to do it. And we think we're ahead. No, they have giant things that go right over the top of the city. You could go right through Chicago and never see anybody. Right over the top of Chicago you go. An enormous thing. And they have, if you think you've seen, Fred, if you think you've seen traffic, do you know they have 19 helicopters that work out there? They have a blimp that works over the whole bunch and just does nothing but give traffic reports on helicopters. It's, yeah, they do. And they call their helicopter guys out there, all kinds of stuff. Every radio station has them on 24 hours a day. There's a steady droning up there. And once in a while you hear one come down onto the great big Dan Ryan Speedway. You're a big crash. It's a big traffic jam. WGN's is down there now in the beginning of the big clover leaf. They're clearing it up. And we here at WBBM bring you the only truly safe traffic report. Once in a while you hear one of these guys cut right off in the middle and he's gone. And out there they don't think about it. They really don't. And they don't have names, by the way. They're reporters. Their traffic reporters are not given any names. They're all called things like, and now here, broadcasting direct from 3,000 feet over the enormous traffic jam on the Dan Ryan Expressway, is your air marshal. This is the air marshal reporting. He comes on and he calls himself, one guy calls himself the Lone Ranger of the air. They do. Another guy calls himself the spy in the sky. Which I think has a kind of a twist to it, because Chicago is very much afraid of communists out there. They suspect that they're going to invade by helicopter there. That's true. Anyway, speaking of scared ones, this is WOR AM at FM New York, and we'll be here for a while. You know, I would like to, it's funny, going out there, though, Chicago has literally, has preempted nature entirely. And one of the things that you notice, I think this is particularly an American thing. It's not necessarily Chicago. It will be pretty much across the country before it's over. I am being shown around Chicago now. Of course, I'm an old native of Chicago, but I'm being shown around Chicago by two natives who never left. And they are saying such things as this with pride. You know, they point out and they say, now look at that fantastic, I want to show you the new Dan Ryan Express interchange way. And they point this out as new beauties of Chicago. It's this enormous concrete wall with 8 million Chevys going. You hear once in a while a Volkswagen being ground up. And they'll point to it with pride. They'll say, now, isn't that lovely? And they'll sit for an hour and just watch the concrete pillars and admire them. And we're about 3 miles out of town, and these guys are pointing to their latest architectural marvel. Have you seen it in Chicago? Two enormous concrete corn cobs sticking right up, and are used. Sticking right up out of the middle of Chicago, and the ugliest looking buildings you ever saw in your life, and the guy, the cab driver says to me, isn't that fantastic? He says, look at that, isn't that amazing? And I looked out, and there were there's two great big concrete tanks sticking up right in the middle of Chicago. Have you seen them? If you haven't seen them, you would not understand what I'm talking about. They look like two big concrete gas storage tanks. Of the kind you see out there in Jersey, you know, where they have the refinery. And people live in them, right in the middle of Chicago. People live in them. They got pipes running down the side where they pipe the stuff up to water and things to bring them in. And I stood outside of this awful-looking thing, and it's made out of this, the dullest-looking concrete. It's made out of this old, used pavement concrete, gray, you know, that kind of gray with oil on it. And the people stand there, and they come from miles around to look at this. Now, I believe that every city, inadvertently, in its art, in its objet d'art, I hate to say art, reproduces itself endlessly. It states what it really believes in unknowingly. Now, I don't know a city that is more dedicated to corn of one kind or another than Chicago. So it is only natural that the great art objects of 20th century Chicago should be two fantastic corn cobs sticking up out of there, right on Wacker Drive, overlooking the loop, standing there as a monument to the Chicago mine forever. Standing there, and then the guy says to me, oh, that's nothing. He says, they are building an 87-story model out on the west side. That's to make sure you don't miss the point, I suspect. We're getting more and more, and they've dehumanized. You know that around Chicago, there is an entire city of drive-ins. There, the drive-ins extend all the way to Iowa, outside of Chicago, on one side, and you can go all the way up to Detroit, and there is not more than 30 or 40 feet between drive-ins in that direction. South to Indianapolis, they are less than that, maybe 20 feet apart, all the way. and it's like a giant spreading fungus, Rob. And what's so fascinating is that there's always people in there glopping down the junk. They are eating like they're out of their skulls. It's like locusts. Drinking malts, hot dogs, they go from one drive into the next. And you can just hear them burping for hours around there, just a steady sound. And, oh, it's true. It's, talk about the Romans. Oh, boy. Some homes have Dad's old-fashioned root beer piped into them. It's an insane... you have to go outside of New York. You know, you can't change New York much. I think New York is essentially a 19th-century city. And the attitudes are largely 19th century, really very much so. We are usually a few years behind what they do in the other towns. Really are. Well, Fred, you know this, that they've had helicopters flying around over Philly for some time, given traffic. Oh, yeah. And out in Chicago, oh, listen, they had... I came back from the Army. One of the best things I ever saw happen in Chicago was the time the light plane flew into the Murrow's Nut House blimp. Which was, it caused terrible excitement there on the loop. They had a blimp. Somebody put a blimp right out of the window of one of the big buildings, a genuine captive, one of these barrage balloons. It was surplus. And they hung this thing at about 2,000 feet. They had a big sign on the side that said, Murrow's Nut House. And about every half hour, the guy riding in the blimp would throw out free peanuts to the people below. Night and day. Leave it to Chicago. And it was sitting there, and about 3 o'clock in the morning, some guy came along in his Piper Cub. And for over 4 hours, peanut shells were coming down all over the Chicagoland area. The Piper people were very unhappy. By the way, the guy got down safely, because he was fat. He had a high center of gravity. LA, now you see, as you go west, 20th century civilization flowers. Here in the East, we still believe in little things like gas lights, and you know, we really do. Down, and people get mad about grass and idiotic little things like that in the sky, and they talk about George Washington's Tavern where he talked to his troops and stuff. You get out in Los Angeles, and it is the only place and the very first place in the country where they have the throwaway automobile, just like the throwaway beer can. Well, yeah. Nobody even knows what kind of a car he drives. I rode around Los Angeles with a guy for 3 days, and I said to him, I said, say, this is an Impala, isn't it? He said, a what? I said, this is an Impala Chevy, isn't it? He said, I don't know, what a Chevy. Oh, yeah, I think it is a Chevy. He said, yeah, I think it is. I think we got it. Yeah, that's right. My wife did say we were getting a Chevy a couple of weeks ago. And we're driving around. I didn't know what kind of a car it was. They throw them away about every 4 or 5 months out there. And they buy car. You can tell because on the radio they have spots that come on and say at 3 o'clock in the morning, are you tired of the car you're driving in? Have you been driving a car for over a month? Why don't you come down to Friendly Fred's right now at this very minute, 4 o'clock in the morning. You'll see our lights in the sky. You'll hear our blimp with its hi-fi stereo playing rock and roll records. And there we are with our 4 a.m. special. Come down and get it. Free seat covers for the first guy that arrives. And you see the headlights coming for miles around. Descending to get the free seats. And you know, they literally work all night selling cars. Just like you call up, you know, here, you can call up a beer joint and get beer delivered at 3 in the morning. Some of their cars come with pop tops. Just split the top and you get, you know. Oh, yes. No, don't think for a minute that that's not true. That we, a big problem, you know, in this land, which... literally worships youth of all kind. I just hate to think how a 74-year-old Pepsi-Cola drinker must feel. It must be a terrible thing. It's a rebuke every time he takes a slug of that stuff. And he feels like an intruder, actually. And all the way up and down the line, have you ever watched beer ads on TV? There isn't a guy over 7 knocking that beer down. Running around out in the backyard and little old Miss Rheingold giggling and squeaking and that dog barking and they're hitting each other with beach balls. And you know, so this is obviously a different world from the world we live in. Now, what happens to all the people, you know, the older ones? You know what I mean? The old, you know those rotten old things. You've seen old people. Well, you know, it's a big problem now. We've got dumps for everything. You go out in Jersey, you've got big old piles of old used cars. We don't have much. We have a little trouble with that once in a while. Do you know that they have a used airplane dump? They have. Have you seen that one in Arizona? All the old airplanes are thrown away out there. They've got millions of them all lined up, P-51s, Spads, Fokkers, Albatross. They've got them all standing out there. Oh, yeah. They've got GBs, BGs, Howard Ikes. They've got them all lined up out there, old airplanes that nobody wants anymore. And they have a place in outside of Philadelphia for old, used Levittown houses. Just take it, they move it, and they throw it away. And they put up another one. Now, the big problem has been for a long time, used people. It really is a problem. There are millions of families that got hundreds of mothers around that persist in hanging around. And fathers that just won't leave the scene in spite of having $2 million worth of insurance. He knows what we could do with it. It's for spite, the old idiot. Always been rotten. And so they're hanging around on the outskirts, always hanging around, watching television and snorting, blowing their nose into the tablecloths. You know how they are. Oh, yeah. And nobody ever recognizes them, seriously. You never see movies about them. They're the non-existent people. If you kids think you have no identity, boy, you never see grandmas in the films unless they're played by Faye Bader and they're damn cute. And they only come in the last minute there to tell Gidget that it's okay to get married to that guy since she's 4 months gone anyway. That's another story. But seriously, though, there is a whole world of people who have no identity, and that's because we don't want them. We just refuse to. We don't want those people. And so now one of the big new industries springing up is people dumps, where, yeah, people can go. And they call them retirement communities. That's kind of a popular phrase for it. But it's a place where you can send old used fathers and old desiccated mothers and even rotten uncles too, if you're hung up with that one living in the closet. And so you can send them all down to these places, and believe it or not, you know, there is a scheme. Have you heard about it? There's a scheme afoot that it involves a kind of insurance. I received the brochure on it the other day. It was unbelievable. I couldn't believe it. It says it's an insurance policy that you can take out so that you won't be hung with an old man or an old mother. And that the minute this old lady begins to be a drag on you, you call up the insurance company and they take care of all the details, which is the way they put it. Oh, boy. Did I show you that? They take care of all the details. And it says reasonable premiums, too. And it says it's humane. I kind of like that. It says it's humane. And it reminds me a lot of the ASPCA. Is that the way those things go? They'll take care of other kinds of pets, too, in a humane fashion. And old people remind us of time. They really do. It always bothers me. Just the idea of time. I think, as a matter of fact, one of the things that's going to bother a lot of people about the World's Fair is that the World's Fair is a milestone. If a city can go along for years without any kind of a big thing by which you can measure time, then you never know it's ever really passed. But the minute this World's Fair opens, from that day on, people will begin to measure the time from that moment. Just as some guys say, well, I remember the World's Fair. He's referring, of course, to the 39 fair with the trial on the Paris fair. And then somebody says, well, that was how many years ago? That was 20... What? He says, another World's Fair. There's another World's Fair. And pretty soon you will begin to be worried by the number of World's Fairs you can remember. And I would suggest before long we will stop having World's Fairs. yeah, I do. I think that they... Of course, the World's Fair is a very commercial thing. I think that... That World's Fairs have changed a great deal, and this World's Fair is probably going to be a compendium of gigantic commercials, one way or the other. There'll be commercials for Russia, there'll be commercials for Hungary, There'll be commercials for the United States. There, I understand they have a pavilion that is devoted entirely to a giant commercial for religion. Well, actually, not religion. Billy Graham, which is different. Although that's a controversial statement. I know there are a lot of people. It's difficult to know. Sometimes, you know, it's hard to tell what God is. You ever have that feeling? It's hard to tell. So, well, maybe Billy Graham, it's, you know, on the other side. How are you doing in the popularity contest, friend? Do people still love you? Wait a minute there while that one soaks in. Are you sure? How do you, have you ever thought about how people look at you? Really look at you? I might be tempted to sing my famous blues song. My walking, talking, rotten blues. About the guy one time who really saw himself the way he was. And marched off into the middle distance, myopically. He preferred it that way. Have you ever envied those who have astigmatism, friend? The world is so soft. Oh, my God, it's fun to be back. Yes, it's been an exciting year out there in Fire Island, and I have all kinds of wonderful, wonderful, wonderful things to tell you. And we're hardly ready yet for our opening. You know, those of you who haven't been to our shop, well, I don't like to make a commercial here, but let's get on with our little suggestions. Here, I think, friends, hasn't it been an exciting summer? Aren't you sorry that it's gone? I'm going to miss my Bermudas. And I'm going to miss all those wonderful evenings and afternoons out on the beach. You know, I'll tell you, friends, sometimes you begin to see that just it's working out. In fact, today we have probably the most interesting of all the young fads that are going around. And of course, what the teenagers do, the old folks will do shortly thereafter. We have a note here from Denver. The latest teenage fad in mid-America has boys combing their hair like girls. And I think it's just delightful. Something called the Soche cut. Soche is short for social. It's the male hairdo for teenagers. It's also called the surf cut out on the West Coast. But under any name, it's just wonderful, good old-fashioned bangs. The kind of bangs that they've been wearing over the East 50s for months. Boys are supposed to let their hair grow straight down over their foreheads and eyebrows. And some of the boys now are even putting a little bleach in the bangs. And for those of you who would like to find out about this, well, we'll have a little booklet out before the end of the month on bleaching your bangs. Or, well, I almost said a little jokey there. It's funny how you all... Oh, my, terrible how the mind works. Under this hairdo, the smart teenage boy today wears a white shirt with a little button-down collar, Madras plaid jacket, a little black tie cut as a string, low-slung white Levi's, white socks, and dirty sneakers. His equally soche girl wears her long hair a la Joan Baez flopping straight down. And a little prop guitar is carried alongside of her. And now for the girls, who, by the way, we're delighted to report are going exactly in the opposite direction. From Bontwit Tellers, we have this wonderful little advertisement that I'd like to read to you in case you've missed it. Oh, it's so exciting. Attention, it reads, the Blooch. Isn't that a wonderfully masculine name, girls, for a shoe? The Blooch, recapitulation of the dashing army boot, girls, comes with a little imitation plastic army canteen and a pistol belt that you can wear over your tweed fatigues. It's the component in the new military movement in fashion, girls. In chestnut or black walnut, OD velvet suede with cobra inset by Capizio. Yes, girls, there'll be a full field inspection tomorrow at 0530, including tent pegs. It's so exciting this fashion season. This has been Chucky. Be sure to hear us again in just 2 weeks when we'll be around with more fashion suggestions from the world of exciting and truly exciting fashions. Goodbye, Z. Goodbye, Z. It's been fun seeing you. Goodbye. I was talking to Dickie the other day. He said, you know, Chucky, it's getting more exciting. Goodbye, Georgie. if the sociologists are keeping track of that. In fact, Kelsey down at the Limelight has a new thing now. He's getting a strange new group of women that come in down there. And the only way he can keep them out is by asking them for their draft cards. All the little innocent girls look. They quite understand what we're talking about. Oh, you do know. Oh, for heaven's sakes, you read the book, didn't you? Oh, my. You know, it's funny. It really is. I've often wondered just at what point do we begin to lose contact with the world that is just out there walking around scratching, spitting, and hollering? I'm very curious about that. The other day I got into an argument or discussion with one of the nice ladies at a big, one of the most important of all the publishing houses here in New York. And we got talking about what's going on in America. And we were discussing the phenomenon. You know, it's hard to phrase some of these things on the air. Usually our minds work in one direction. And one night, she had gone into a hamburger joint here in town, downtown actually. And she found herself knee-deep in large ladies wearing army fatigue jackets about this. I didn't quite know how to tell her about this phenomenon because America largely is unconscious of it. Literally is. It doesn't quite know that it's going on. It knows that its parallel phenomenon, which is in the opposite area, is going on. It's known about this for years and continually talks about it. But it rarely discusses the other side. Now this leads to all kinds of questions. It really does. It leads to many things which cannot be just tossed aside. The questions are such as this. At any given time in history, I think there is a way people talk to one another that is what you might call the accepted way. We sort of have a giant game. Life in a way is an enormous chess game, and not even a chess game. It's more like some kind of a soccer game. And here's an example of it. Let's take books, movies, plays, all the ways that we accept as conventional methods for communicating with one another. Paintings, radio programs. Just name whatever thing you can think of that is a communication. Literally an attempt. One man to say this to another man. Or something. But what we do, we coalesce these things into a kind of a hard layer. And underneath it is the way it really is, which all of us know about. Say you're a chick, right? I'm not a chick, obviously. If I were to come up to you and I would say to you, how does it feel to be a girl? Impossible for you to tell me. Impossible. And you're going to say to me, oh, well, you know, I hurt, my foot hurts, that's how. You haven't said, how does it feel to be a woman? No way of knowing. You couldn't tell me. Now, if you were to come up to me and say, how does it feel to be a man? I could not conceivably tell you. So there you have a great area of total non-communication. No, absolutely no way to say it. No way at all to say it. And so underneath that is a whole panoply of things that we never discuss. Like, do you ever think about death? If you do, what do you think about it? Hardly ever mentioned in any kind of an American communication, ever. Do you ever think about time? Just time. It's never mentioned. It's rarely ever mentioned in books, novels, plays. What do you think when you walk around and you look out? You know, most novels and plays today take place within four walls. That's a 20th century phenomenon. Salinger, for example. You'd never know that it ever rained out. Or you'd never know that there was even the world outside of that room where the Franny is talking to Zooey endlessly about how rotten society is. And you would never know that there's sand out there. So to come to people and say, I'm running on the beauty ticket, no one will buy that. If you say, I'm coming on the ticket that's run those bums out that are bringing ugliness around, then you've got yourself a platform. In short, why is this? No one knows. Do you know no one knows why this is? And this is so accepted by us so much that we never even talk about it. We all like a fist fight, you know. We all like wars. Uh-oh, all the girls' eyes narrow at that one. The point I'm making here is that it depends on how you define war. There are many kinds of war. Many. There's so many that in the end... There you go. There's semantics. Now, none of these things are ever touched on in the novels or plays. Not really. How do you like being a person? What do you really think about color? Really? I mean, seriously, what do you really think about color? It's a hard question. Because you can't get a man of another color to tell you what he thinks of your color. Not really. It's very hard. You say to a man, are you glad to be home? He couldn't even tell you that. What do you think of Chicago being in New York? Do you know anything about it, really? No, really. Do you know that they're as foreign to you as, say, the Luxembourgians are? Oh, truly. Totally different ethic all the way down the line. And by the way, they are totally foreign to the Los Angelinos all the way down the line. The East Siders in New York can't comprehend the West Siders.